Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and we have a bit of a special episode today. I'm joined by my colleague, Herman Pretorius. Herman, how's it going?
Well, I must say I'm excited because we're going to talk about polling the whole time. And if that's going to bore you, you know, complain to Nick. He's the guy whose pay gets affected by whether people watch the full video. But for the rest of us, it's just a good moment to really sit back and enjoy the data. So, Nick, thank you. I'm great.
Yeah, no, we'll do our best to really bring home why this polling stuff is interesting and important. And we're very happy to be joined today by Gabriel Macon, who's the Director of Research at the Social Research Foundation, a group who were, you know, are quite new, but made big waves in the last election when they had some of the most accurate polling on the election that was. So Gabriel, we're very happy to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Nicholas, and good to see you too, Herman.
So let us begin with the most basic question, just so we sort of get on the page, which is twofold. One, how is it that polls actually work? This polling data that we're going to be discussing today is from February of this year, I believe. When you say you send out people into the field to research polls, what does that actually mean? What does it mean when you do these polls? Are you knocking on people's doors? Are you sending them SMSs? What are you doing? And the second question, and this is one that often comes up in the public debate and frustratingly is not very well explained by a lot of media houses, is people will say, okay, well, how many people did you ask in this survey? And the answer in this particular survey is 1,004 people. And people say, well, then how do we know that this represents, you know, what the people of South Africa actually think on an issue? You know, is this all just people from one area? Is this all just white people or black people or whatever demographic you can choose to slot in there? So over to you, Gabriel. I mean, let's, you know, what do you make of those two questions?
So the first thing on how we do the polls, I think, firstly, every poll that the Social Research Foundation does, we conduct it telephonically. The reason why is that there's a very deep cell phone penetration in South Africa. And people, because it's a relatively new phenomenon that people have cell phones, people are actually much more willing to answer the phone when a stranger calls, and then are much more willing to have the conversation when someone receives a phone call from Victory Research, who are the pollsters who do it for us. We outsource to them the kind of grunt work of calling and taking them through the survey. They will say, "Hello, I'm from Victory Research. Do you have 20 minutes to do a kind of questionnaire?" And then they will get taken through a list of questions. And so that's how we do it. And then sample size, so you mentioned in our latest survey, we've done 1,004 people. And so people are like, well, how do you, as you say, how do you get a representative sample of South Africans? How do we actually know that this? So in a very kind of layman's terms, we use few methods to figure out the kind of exact demographic makeup of South Africa, and then have our survey respondents match as closely as possible to that demographic makeup. So we're trying to get this same percentage of male and female as in South Africa. We're trying to get the same percentage of people in the different provinces across the country to respond to us. We're trying to get the same percentages, black, white, colored, Indian, that is in the country. But obviously, a sample of 1,004 is not a sample of the whole country. And so the way that we account for the fact that the sample is not entirely representative of the country is what's known as the margin of error, which is the degree to which numbers can vary up and down. So in our latest survey, we have a margin of error of about 4%, which means that every time I say a number from the new surveys, it can be 4% up or 4% down. And so in that kind of variance, what we're doing is we're covering the fact that we don't have this representative sample, which means that, you know, errors can slip in. But because of the way and the kind of the science behind how we gathered the sample, we're very certain that the data that we have this South African public opinion will lie somewhere within the margins that of error that we have. So to kind of give you an example, the latest survey has the ANC at 32%, which means it lies probably in a band of 28 to 36%. And we're relatively certain that it does lie in that band.
Now, I think what's interesting to me is that people very easily criticize polling, particularly with sort of the anecdotal, but I've never been polled. But what I think is so useful with the Social Research Foundation work is you had that historic tracking poll for the elections last year. And really the first time something like that has happened in South Africa. And if we compare it to America, in America, you've got 50 states and about 10 of them are swing states. And towards the final weeks of an election, you can't, you know, sneeze without sneezing on a tracking poll. In America, they have like 7 or 8 of them every day almost. So for watchers of politics who want to understand, you know, what is it that boosts support or loses support for the political parties, that was very useful. But particularly the accuracy of that poll is sort of a layman shortcut to say that, look, your estimates got the your final a tracking day poll on a 66% turnout was 42.2%. The ANC at the end of the day got 40.2%. So if people don't believe the methodological explanation, at least with the Social Research Foundation, you can point them to say that, okay, but you know, their methodology clearly works whether you and I agree with it or not. How does this poll differ from that tracking poll that ended up to be truly a properly reliable analytical tool?
So the tracking poll was a very interesting thing. It's kind of different, very different poll to what we did now, because the tracking poll was intended, a poll is normally a snapshot of a moment in time. So this poll that we did was conducted from the 3rd to the 17th of February. And so it tracks public opinion in that period. But what we were interested in was tracking public opinion right up until this, basically the day before the election, so that by the time the election came, we would be able to say with relative certainty the band that the parties, especially the major parties, would land within. And luckily, if we go to the 58% turnout models that we did generate, which kind of were the turnout in the end, we got, I think, almost every party barring MK within our margin of error, which means that actually we got them on the nose, because every time we put these numbers out, we say, you know, remember, there's this variance that's important. Mm. So the tracking poll was essentially a normal poll, exactly the same as what we did here, that was conducted in the beginning of April to the middle of April. In the beginning of March, the middle of March last year. But then what we did was we, every day during the tracking poll, we would interview 300 new people and drop out the 300 oldest people from that poll. And by doing that, we created a moving average of the different political parties' support. And for the tracking poll itself, we only asked very briefly, you know, if a national general election was held today, who would you vote for? And provincially, who would you vote for? And then some demographic questions, so that we knew that the sample that we had was demographically and geographically representative. With polls like the one that we've done now, it's much more of a snapshot, much more of a moment in time. And we make the polls much more extensive, where we cover a wide variety of different political topics, so that we aren't just figuring out, you know, what is the kind of national political mood in terms of party support, but on questions like expropriation without compensation, where does South African public opinion lie? On Cyril Ramaphosa's presidency, where does public opinion lie? On the control of the GNU, where does public opinion lie? And so our newest survey is a much smaller sample with a wider margin of error, but with a much wider focus than our election track, which was really kind of zeroed in on political party support.
Now, the ANC on 32%.
Let's just go through all of those recently. So the sort of we covered this on the show, I think last week, Monday, actually. The shock result in this poll was what the ANC on, as Herman says, 32% of the vote, the DA on 25%, MK on about 12%. So, you know, basically in the same place, viewing that's within the margin of error of what the election result they got. EFF down to 6%, IFP 3%, Patriotic Alliance 2%. And everyone else 6%. But I think the thing that was noted in your report was that there were a lot of undecided voters. So what are your thoughts on, firstly, how the ANC has seen such a shocking decline? And how do these undecided voters work? You know, in the tracking poll, there weren't undecided voters. So how do these come into the situation?
So I think that there are a lot of kind of things that we need to unpack there. So the top line figures you have are all 100% correct. That's exactly what we found. But we need to be responsible in this, I think, and say that, you know, when an election is held, there is no such thing as 15% of the electorate saying, no, I don't know. Because if anyone says, I don't know on a ballot or spoils their ballot or does whatever, then they aren't counted. And so really, if an election were held, the ANC would probably sit at about 40%, because it's very likely that all of those undecideds mainly come from the ANC. And it's very likely that, given that they are undecided and came from the ANC, that if they were forced to make a decision, they'd probably revert back to the ANC. But then, as you point out, they are undecided. And what does it mean then to be undecided in a poll like this? Well, it isn't just simply that you answered the question, if a national general election were held today, who would you vote for? You said, I don't know, because that's not exactly how we do this. We have a very kind of sophisticated method to make sure that when people say they're going to vote for someone, they mean it. And when people say, I don't know, we try and figure out exactly who they are actually going to vote for. And so it works that we use leadership favorability, which is the feelings that people have towards party leaders. We use party favorability, and we use some performance indicators of the biggest big three parties, really, big four parties now, with MK and EFF being kind of one and the same, but worth tracking them as well, to figure out, you know, what people's feelings are towards it. So if someone says, I don't know, but answered the question, how do you feel towards, on a scale of 0 to 100, how do you feel towards, for example, Gate and McKenzie? And they said, oh, 98. And then we asked, on a scale from 0 to 100, how do you feel towards the Patriotic Alliance? They say, oh, probably 88. And so both very warm feelings. But then they say, I don't know who I'm going to vote for in the next election. We can say, actually, well, given what you've said, told us about who you like in politics, you're probably a PA voter, as an example. But what it means now that we have 15% undecided is that 15% of likely voters, because these aren't the people that we disqualified in our turnout model, because we modeled them based on their proclivity to vote, which was also what we were doing in the tracking poll. And so we have a very sophisticated method of figuring out who is going to vote. And these people are going to vote. And that's very important, number one. And number two, they are actually undecided because they don't have any warm feeling to any leader, to any party, and they don't think that any of the big political parties are doing particularly well. And so the fact that these guys are undecided means that we have them as undecided in our model means that they are completely undecided. And so why now do we have undecideds versus not having undecideds in the tracking poll? Well, it's 2025. It's kind of a nothing year for electoral politics, at least in South Africa. And so there is time for people to be undecided. There's no pressure on them to make up their mind about any sort of political parties. And so they have the ability to kind of sit and watch and see what happens. And as sure as our conversation goes on, we'll get more and more talking about the GNU and whatever. But as a kind of top headline as to why I think what's motivating this indecision amongst the voter base is that the GNU seems to have become, to these undecided voters, another instance of a false time horizon of ANC reform. And every time there has been a false time horizon of ANC reform, the ANC will get punished electorally. And so this is another case in which the ANC said, no, we're going to change. We're going to implement policies that will make your improve your lives. And that hasn't come to that hasn't been what's happened with the GNU. And in response, the South African voter base is going, okay, well, we're not sure what is going on with the GNU. We don't really like this new direction, but no one else has made any sort of grand appeal to us. So I'm going to vote in the next election, but because it's 2025, I've got time to wait. I'm just kind of sitting, watching, and waiting to see what happens as politics evolves.
So basically, it's something like around about a quarter of ANC supporters are now sort of going, I don't know about this whole thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's get into this, into some of the other things you talked about. Go ahead.
I perhaps just ask, were you guys expecting the ANC to be that low? Because one of the, you know, ridiculous piece of criticism that I think gets lobbed at pollsters is that you're in the business of affirming assumptions. Was your assumption DA up a bit, ANC down massively?
No, not at all. In fact, our assumption was that the ANC would be up closer to 50% and the DA would be sitting somewhere in the high teens. And if we were to have taken bets on that, that's where about all of the team would be kind of lying in terms of what we expected, because we watch politics from this kind of top level, very analysis driven, focused on the political games that are happening. And I think a lot of time that disconnects us from the reality that most South African voters live in, where the political games don't mean anything to them because really it's not improving their lives. And they know that these political games are going to lead probably to them being worse off than if their political games weren't played in the first place. So when we see, you know, the ANC kind of appearing to dominate the agenda of the GNU, we think that, oh, yes, this means that because the ANC is winning the power games, they're winning the battle of public opinion. But really, the power games and public opinion are completely separated from each other. And so as pollsters, we aren't actually in the game of affirming assumptions. Throughout my time as in the Social Research Foundation, I've had assumption after assumption be crushed by the reality of public opinion and the reality that the South African voter is far more sophisticated and far more kind of and understands their position far better than the media classes and the political classes generally give them credit for.
I think it was actually Franz Kronier, the head of the Social Research Foundation and our former boss, who said sort of after a presentation going through polling data on South Africa that if you're now slightly more confused or more interested than you were in South Africa when you went into this into it, then actually it's done its job. And I think that's exactly sort of what you're saying here is this. You know, there's all these assumptions, these kind of lazy assumptions about what South Africa is actually like and what everyone thinks. But when you start drilling down to it, you really reveal that, as you say, people are a lot wiser and a lot more sensible than they're often given exactly. credit for. Go ahead, Emma.
And what is, sorry, I might be jumping the gun here, but we've been talking about the GNU and the DA has gone up in the GNU, the ANC has gone down in the GNU. Has the perception of the GNU changed compared to September last year when
That was exactly what I wanted to get onto is the next sort of batch of answers you gave us from your polling is about what people think of the GNU, what people think of each party in the GNU. Can you just kind of take us through sort of broadly speaking what the trends and things going on there as you know, as Herman was alluding to?
So broadly speaking, and this was an interesting thing, when we this is the second time we've asked about overall GNU performance and then individual party performance within the GNU. And the only change between overall and individual party performance in the GNU is that overall, the GNU's performance is now about 10% down. I think it was about maybe just under 60% of people thought the GNU was performing quite or very well in September, and now it's sub 50%. And whereas when it comes to individual party performance, they've all kind of, the ANC, DA, IFP, PA, and VF Plus, they kind of all are steady in how people think that they're performing inside of the GNU, which is interesting. But we wanted to drill deeper into, because we'd been watching South African politics, and since September, you know, so much has gone on. And the primary thing, though, that has gone on is that it's clear now, much clearer now than it was then, that the ANC is really in charge of the policy direction and the policy agenda of the GNU. And so we wanted to drill further down into, are people picking up on that? So one of the questions that we asked was, I'm going to read you three statements. And the three statements essentially are, one, the ANC controls everything in the GNU. Two, the GNU is a partnership of equals. And three, it's the small parties who control the direction of the GNU. And about 50% of all voters said that it's the ANC who control everything inside of the GNU. But when it comes to DA voters, now 62% think that the ANC controls everything. And I think when you take all of the opposition party voters, they're very clearly in favor of the idea that it's the ANC dictating the policy agenda. And so voters are down on the performance of the GNU overall, but think that the ANC controls its direction. And now you can start to see what is happening with these unknown voters, why people are checking out, because everything else, all of the other individual party performance stays steady, right? So they haven't changed their opinion on any of the other part, like how the parties are doing inside of it, but they think that the ANC controls everything, and they think that the GNU is worse than it was in September.
So just a quick aside, I think the small parties control everything question is essentially, for me, a bit of a stand-in for the narrative that the MK and EFF often push. They talk, if you listen to them in Parliament, about the DA-led GNU and the white monopoly capital-controlled GNU. And it's very clear that that message is not landing outside of that sort of fifth of the population who seems, you are, I think, already either voting for or kind of keen on the EFF and MK.
Yeah, exactly. I think that as I said, and I will reiterate again and again throughout this conversation, it turns out that South African voters and the South African public is far more perceptive than anyone ever gives them credit for in the media or in the political class. And this is another instance where it's quite obvious that the ANC control the agenda. And to the majority of South Africans, it is, they see it as that way. And I think if you take the, you know, it's about 80% who think it's a partnership of equals or the ANC controls everything. And that means that, yeah, as you say, the kind of narrative that, you know, this is a DA-led, it just falls flat, especially amongst the public. But I wanted to kind of extend further when it comes to the GNU, and to maybe I'm preceding a question here, but I wanted to also point towards another interesting factor that that maybe we'll talk about it in more detail as the conversation goes forward. But it's that after we asked questions about the GNU, we started asking questions about Cyril Ramaphosa as president. Mm. And one of the questions that we asked is, would you support a DA-led motion of no confidence in Cyril Ramaphosa for the slow pace of his reform? So keep it very broad, very general. Just the idea is that there's a motion of no confidence. And on that question, the data splits about 50-50, with different demographics varying wildly. Although when it comes to opposition voters' views, now 67% of DA voters were in support of a motion of no confidence in Cyril Ramaphosa. We also put another question in a similar vein about should Cyril Ramaphosa resign because of the fact that he's had the historic defeat falling 17% in the 2024 election. And when asked in that way, the data splits about 60-40 in favor of Cyril Ramaphosa resigning. And then we did what I think is one of the most interesting findings, is that we said, okay, imagine now that there was a successful motion of no confidence in Cyril Ramaphosa. And because of that, there's now an election. And so that means that now people are thinking the only thing that's different is that Cyril Ramaphosa is no longer president of the ANC. And so they kind of have to do their assumption about who is the president of the ANC then, you know, whatever. And under those conditions, the ANC drops as low as 21%. The DA moves up to about 28%. MK moves to about 15%. EFF moves to 9%. And the biggest gainer, though, is in, again, in the undecideds, who move up to about 20% now. And so they undecided voters then become the third biggest party in South Africa. And it's under those conditions we have zero idea how the chips will fall, because once again, that 20% of undecided voters will vote and they will determine the results of the election. Because if they en masse go to any of the individual parties, that party will become the biggest party in South Africa. And so what's interesting, at least that we're kind of starting to see out of this data, is that the GNU is losing its shine, and that's having a deleterious effect on ANC support. Cyril Ramaphosa, who is kind of anchoring the, at least the ANC support at the moment, he is actually now viewed by non-ANC voters in a very negative light, going so far as to, you know, 60% of all South African voters thinking that he should resign is a huge amount, given that a few years back, you, if you were to ask that question, you would probably only get about 20-30% support.
Yeah, he had sort of two-thirds approval rating, something like that.
Yes, he did. And I think in 2019, he was about 68% approval rating. You know, now we've seen how far he's fallen. But you've got these, you've got this interplay happening where it's the ANC is hurting itself by driving the policy agenda of the GNU, because voters realize that this is not in their interests. And but you also have the fact that, you know, you can no longer rely on Cyril Ramaphosa as a thing to as a person to bring support into the ANC, but Cyril Ramaphosa anchors support, this whatever support still remains inside of the ANC, and without him, you know, everything's to play for. And so the only real option that lies ahead of the ANC, if they want to be electorally successful again, is to make good on the promise of reform. They have, by through their actions, have played themselves into a corner in which the only way that they start to bring support back is to finally make good on the promise that, you know, this, the change is coming, and to pursue pro-growth policies and policies that will get increased fixed investment, will get the necessary growth levels to create sustained increases in employment that people are so desperate for in South Africa. And barring that, there is really nowhere else for them to turn. And that is, I think, one of the most kind of fascinating and key points that have come out of this data, at least for me.
Herman, you're muted.
Crap. That's probably the most sense I've ever heard. So two questions. One is on this Ramaphosa point. I think what is also quite astonishing is, to my recollection at least, we look at ANC leaders, Mandela in 1994, clear electoral asset. Mbeki, 1999, clear electoral asset. make E 2004 perhaps less of an electoral asset, but boosted by a successful economy. So perhaps not an electoral asset in his persona, but an electoral asset in what his government has delivered. But the moment he becomes an electoral liability, the party swings against him. Polokwane, you've got Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma going into 2009, electoral asset. He is the response to the aloof, out of touch Mbeki. He is the man of the people, the populist. And then when he becomes that electoral liability post the 2016 local government elections, ANC again get rid of electoral liability, insert electoral asset, Cyril Ramaphosa. But now we're in a situation where Ramaphosa is both electoral liability and electoral asset. And it's not quite clear which one is the more impactful option for the ANC to go. Do they keep the asset bit of Ramaphosa and sort of cope with the liability bit, or do they change to get rid of the liability bit and get to a new asset? That is a remarkable position the ANC, I think, has never been in.
100%. And what's interesting now, we've polled Paul Mashatile's favorability consistently since about March of 2023. And in this recent poll, he's got the highest favorability that he's ever had. So the Cyril Ramaphosa's favorability, 44%. Paul Mashatile on his highest favorability ever, 15.4%. There is no one outside of Cyril Ramaphosa within the ANC that has significant favorability ratings. And that's a real problem, because there's no longer someone to turn to as a replacement, as an asset, because everyone else inside of the party is not viewed, it attracts nowhere near the kind of favorability and the approval that Cyril Ramaphosa has. And even his deputy is 30% lower in a poll that is a historic low for the ANC. So it is a hugely difficult conundrum. And so really, they can't rely on the personalities and the changing on the top to win them back any more votes. They've, as I said before, they've played themselves into this corner where the only option is real reform.
But this also actually raises an interesting point that that a lot of us over the years have talked about, is how Ramaphosa is in a lot of ways singularly responsible for this, because he's misplayed his hand. There was originally this narrative when he came in that, you know, he needed to balance factions within the ANC and all these sort of things. But as you point out, the other factions in the ANC really, they don't have the electoral support. At any point, Ramaphosa could say, I'm walking away and I'm taking half the votes with me, and all these other guys might be in big trouble. So there is no impediment, I think, electorally to Ramaphosa embracing these reforms, because, you know, as you say, without them, the party is probably in a direction of no hope with nowhere to turn. And yet the ANC seems so captured by their sort of internal worries, the fear of that label of being sellouts that the MK and the EFF lay on them all the time, the constantly and making that sure
that the left of the ANC tarnished Mbeki with.
Yes. The making sure the SACP is on board, not wanting to anger the unions, trying to keep Lesufi in the tent, trying to push back against the MK and EFF. This is playing to an audience that is entirely internal and doesn't actually exist in the country, at least in any real numbers.
I think there's something that I want to pick on there. It's not playing to an audience that's entirely internal, because one of the things that we've tracked historically now, since our first poll, which was in July of 2022, is public opinion regarding a wide variety of different policy areas. And if you'll indulge me, I'd like to just give you a list of policy areas in which the ANC has moved far past its base. Number one, on the question of higher or lower taxes, there is vast support, about two-thirds support amongst all South Africans, about 60% of ANC voters, for lowering taxes. And this is across two or three different surveys across 3 years. When it comes to BEE in government appointments and in government procurement, that's almost an 80-20 split against BEE in appointments and for merit. And when it comes to ANC voters, again, they're about 75% of ANC voters are for merit and against BEE in both appointment and procurement. When it comes to school choice, it's more of a 50-50 issue, but still a significant chunk of the ANC is in favor of the idea of school choice and private universities and private schools. When it comes to the idea, should non-BEE businesses BEE compliant businesses be allowed to operate freely so long as they pay taxes and generate employment? That is again a kind of 70-30 issue where ANC voters think that, of course, if they pay taxes and employ people, they should be allowed to operate. When it comes to expropriation without compensation, two-thirds, we asked in this latest survey, we asked three questions about expropriation without compensation. We asked, do you think it's a good economic idea? Two-thirds of voters said no. 60% of ANC voters said no. We asked, do you trust the government to expropriate land in the public interest? Two-thirds of voters say no. Again, 60% of ANC voters say no.
So often in public, that expropriation policy is described as a populist policy. It is rare that a populist policy is so unpopular.
Exactly. And just as a last thing, just to show you how sophisticated South Africans' views are, we asked to make sure that we aren't just asking kind of negatively pitched questions for EWC. We said, do you think that expropriation without compensation will drive away foreign investment? And then again, this two-thirds of voters said yes, now it will drive away investment. And again, 60% of ANC voters do think that it will drive away investment. And so along almost, and then the one area of policy in which the ANCs may be, but we're not sure because we've had different splits depending on how we've asked the question, and it's the most difficult policy area to actually get a good read on, is the NHI. But even on NHI, this is an issue that at best has a like 50-50 split in, and maybe a 55-45 split in favor of it. And so every single policy area that the ANC is kind of the more, every single populist policy area that the ANC has advanced on is incredibly unpopular with its base. And it drives support away from the ANC because they see it every time the ANC advances on these policies, the base sees it as a betrayal of their material interests. To kind of illustrate this as a point, moving back to our tracking poll,
I was just about to say, yeah.
In the 2 weeks that led up to the signing of NHI, what we'd seen was a day-by-day kind of steady increase from the ANC moving from about 40% all the way up to 46%. NHI was signed, and immediately the ANC's support plateaus and then craters back down. And so there is actually no argument that can be made that the ANC is appealing towards its base. The ANC is appealing towards the ideologues inside of the party, and you know it's appealing to what you've pointed out, all of the different interests that kind of make up the leadership. But when it comes to the ANC's voter base, there is no claim that the ANC is not at all interested in listening to what its voters are trying to tell it.
And people listening to this podcast, please. And watching, please go to srfreports.co.za. All the SRF reports are there, free to read, incredible data. And I've got the tracking poll, the 58% tracking poll turnout model here to my right. And you can literally, the line, the dotted line, the 13th of May, there's a wobble in ANC support. The 13th of May is the day it was announced that Ramaphosa will be signing the NHI. Then it's back up on the 14th, 15th, 16th, inches up. And then on the 15th, the day the thing is signed, they still tick up to the 16th. And from there, they go from 46.4% to a low of 39.8%. So I just wanted to give the numbers of what Gabriel has now been describing. It isn't just, oh, you know, theoretically we're postulating. On the best indicator that this country has ever seen in terms of what impacts public opinion for or against the ANC on one of these key issues, we've got clear data showing them losing 7 percentage points within as many days. That is remarkable. It's something that I do want to, we've spent a lot of time now on the ANC, something that I am curious about, and it comes back to your earlier point of sort of us being in the analytical bubble, and we try not to be. We try to be data-based and out there, but at the end of the day, I think...
But we are only human after all.
Speak for yourself. We become hypercritical or whatever the case may be, but you guys had a bit of a betting pool, sort of idea thinking DA high teens, 18-19% probably. I would have said DA lower 20s, 22. And then the other day you took me through the data and you said a very interesting thing. You said the DA's relative restraint in picking fights, the very thing that have been frustrating many liberals and many of us, our colleagues, that restraint might have actually won them support in the public mind. Could you elaborate on that, perhaps?
Well, I think, so, you know, in kind of spelling out exactly how unpopular the ANC's policy agenda is, it kind of explains why the DA has picked up support, a little bit of support since then, because the ANC is advancing on its policy agenda. Its policy agenda is unpopular, and voters are attributing correctly the advance on the ANC's policy agenda to the ANC. And so the fact that the DA has kind of sat back and said and let the ANC move forward and move forward and move forward means that voters are looking at who to blame for these policies decisions that are being made, they're looking directly at the ANC. And by not kicking things up, the DA has kind of just allowed the collapsing support of the ANC to it's picked up a few percentage points. Now the
right,
question is
they've avoided the label of being obstructionists.
Exactly. But the question is this going to be sustainable? Because the problem that the DA I think will start to find is that the brush that's painting the ANC as a problematic party, it will start to paint the DA too, because the DA is part of this government. And although the ANC is the one to suffer the most right now, if the DA is in a government that is responsible for the implementation of incredibly unpopular policies, the DA will find itself, I think, suffering electorally. And it will find the fact that although it hasn't seen that issue yet, it will emerge later down the line. So the DA, but if I was a DA strategist reading this, this data that comes from the Social Research Foundation, I would think to myself, oh my gosh, there is so much space for us to push for reform. And if we can actually position ourselves and communicate correctly that we are pushing for reform and that the reform is targeted towards growth and focused on alleviating unemployment, which is the number one issue to South African voters and has been in every single poll that we've done by a wide, wide margin. If the DA can position themselves in that way, then they won't just be picking up votes as the ANC collapses, but those undecided voters who are kind of looking for a place to go might start to attribute the DA with the correct policy positions and might start to move towards the DA. And so, you know, maybe it's good and the DA can be happy that they've picked up 1 or 2 percentage points by not really doing anything. But the thing is, if they were to be doing things and advocating for policies that they've always advocated for, then they would be probably picking up far more voters, because the ANC is shooting itself in the foot with its policy agenda. And so if the DA can come in with a much more appealing alternative, then the DA will be the one to pick up those undecided voters. And so, you know, I think that while one can say maybe, you know, the DA has been successful because it's not seen as obstructionist or it's not seen as trying to get in the way, what it indicates that, you know, when 15% of the votes are undecided and move out of kind of politics and check out, what that should indicate to the DA is actually there are much more gains to be had than we're currently having. And if we aren't careful, our voters will start to become undecided as well, because why would they keep attributing us with anything good if we are in a government that's responsible for the destruction of people's material circumstances?
I think that's exactly right. All right, is there anything else we want to go into before we move on, close up for today, Herman?
Perhaps one point on policy and then a question on sort of a media polling that you snuck in there that I found terribly interesting. But you asked here, how familiar are you with the NHI, with the Expropriation Act? And it surprised me that people qualified themselves as, on the Expropriation Act, very familiar, 33.4%, somewhat familiar, 39%. That's 72%, 73% familiar with Expropriation Act. NHI, 23.8%, 24% familiar, very familiar, somewhat familiar, 35.9%, 36%. Again, 60% of people, comes back to that point that South Africans aren't policy nerds, perhaps. But NHI, it isn't something that's happening far away. It is something that they connect with their living circumstances. Expropriation, same, for positive or negative. Did that familiarity quotient surprise you? Because certainly it was not what I was expecting when I saw you ask that question.
I think it did surprise me to a degree. But at the same time, you know, when it comes, it isn't as though there are a huge amount of different policies being discussed all the time. How kind of South African policies seem to happen is that they happen one at a time with a huge amount of debate and furore all at that moment. And so the fact that, you know, this was happening, especially with the expropriation stuff, this poll was happening in the kind of peak of the debate around expropriation, land reform, all of that. I think that shows, the kind of filters in, because you're hearing about it constantly. And when it comes to the NHI, I think that that's much more of a case, as you point out, that it is a policy that affects people's material circumstances and healthcare. An interesting fact about healthcare, for example, is that there are more Black people who have private medical schemes than there are white people in South Africa. It's an obvious thing if you think about the country demographically. And then I think there's as many, I don't want to get my numbers entirely wrong, but there is a huge, huge amount of people who pay out of pocket for private medical treatments. And so people understand, when it comes to NHI, exactly, you know, what the problems are, which are that there are non-functional government hospitals and clinics, and they understand as well that the private hospitals function very well. And so they worry rightfully about the point that if the government takes charge of the private hospitals, maybe they all just look like the non-functioning government hospitals. And that's a deep, deep worry for people who, you know, who have only recently been able to earn enough income to have a private medical aid to be able to, you know, enjoy the first class healthcare service that private medical providers in South Africa do provide. But I wanted to, before we kind of come to close and before we talk about the media stuff, I realized that I wanted to give you, when I was talking about ANC DA support, I wanted to go back again to our first poll, this July 2022 poll, which was incredibly important, incredibly interesting. And because I remember that we asked a very interesting question, which is, what is the reason why you support the political party you support? And there was a number of different questions. I want to reduce the ANC majority. I think my party governs well. I believe in what my party stands for. My parents voted for them, et cetera, et cetera. And when it came to ANC voters, only 19% said that they vote for the ANC because the ANC governs well. A further 6% said that they vote for the ANC because they believe in what it stands for. The ANC voters do not think the party governs well and do not think that and do not believe in what the party stands for. It's other things that are motivating their support. They don't feel that they have a choice. Their parents voted for the party. You know, the number of different reasons outside of the governance and ideological aspects. But when you look at DA voters, now you see that 16% say that they wanted to reduce the ANC majority, 30% believe in what the party stands for, and 26% believe that the party governs well. And so the ANC support is not being motivated by a positive vision of what the ANC does or what it stands for, but DA support is being motivated by that. And so how that kind of intersects with what I was saying was that, you know, as the kind of bulwarks of ANC support fall away, and as the party kind of keeps losing because it keeps pressing forward on these unpopular policies, it's no longer a good enough thing to say, you know, I'm going to support this party because my parents voted for it, whatever their reasoning is, because it becomes a very, very thin reason when you've got yet another instance of the ANC kind of moving in a policy agenda that you don't like, that you don't want to see. And so there is so many kind of angles of attack that you, when you look at the ANC and its support, as to why, you know, the only thing that they really can do is reform and start to bring people back to the idea that the ANC is a party that can govern well and that the ANC has good ideas. Because at the moment, no one, not even their supporters, really believe that about the party.
Sure, Nick, want to retract my question on the media stuff. This is a note worth ending on.
Yeah, no, as the kids say, big oof. my camera's malfunctioned if you're watching on video, but I think let's call it to a close there, unless you have anything final to add, Gabriel.
Yes, to flesh this out with a last little point was that why we now see this 25% of ANC support, which kind of make up the 15% undecided. We saw this also way, way back in 2022 with a simple question we asked, which is like, would you continue supporting the ANC if it lost its majority? And so we've had all of these, you know, we've talked all through what's motivating ANC support. We can't really put too much of a finger on it. An operating theory of ours was two things, that it was the fear of the opposition and fear of what happens if the ANC loses its majority. Now, we've seen what happens if the ANC loses its majority. There's nothing to fear. But in 2022, we asked, if the ANC lost its majority, would you continue to support the party? And then we found that 22% of ANC voters said that if the ANC majority lost its majority, they would no longer vote for that party. And that 22% are the undecideds, the free agents. And so
yeah,
they're going.
So it's 22% of ANC support translated roughly to 10% of the entire electorate.
Exactly. And that group is now where what finds itself outside of the ANC. And that group is going to watch and wait. And it's, I think, an incredibly exciting thing that the ANC have to reform if they want to, have to make actual reforms if they want to bring people back into the party. And if they don't, that there are these free agents in a huge amount of free agents in the South African political system who will determine the next election. And that really does mean that if nothing happens up until the next national election, then anything could happen in that election.
No, that's a really great point to make. So there's everything to play for. And South Africa truly, I think, did enter a new age after the 2024 election. I think that's what some of the stuff makes very clear. So obviously, we're going to be watching your guys' polling a lot in the future because it's proven so excellent so far. And we really thank you for that. I think the public debate has been vastly improved by having just this treasure trove of publicly available, good quality data that you guys through Victory Research have managed to do. And I mean, last election was just so much better to read because a lot of the kind of, I don't know what to call it, more established commentary on elections often ends up becoming very boring and cliched. And there's always a, you know, DA scandal of the week and the ANC holds a big rally somewhere. And then people comment about how many people came or didn't come. As it turns out, a lot of that stuff is not very useful. And the polling you guys did really is. So thank you so much for your time today. This was absolutely fascinating. And I hope that our listeners found it just as fascinating.
Thank you so much for having me on. And also thank you guys for the excellent work that you do in the South African politics and in keeping the country together.
Oh, well, we try. Anyway, thank you very much. And we'll see you all tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.